Chapter 2. Bad Tigger. Miri stares longingly out the window.
I wish I could poof myself off the bus.
Unfortunately for her, she can't. The one and only spell Mom has cast in the past month is a location charm that keeps Miri and me shackled to camp. It's essentially an invisible anklet made of distilled vinegar and cactus essence that works like a high-powered magnet. All we know is that we can't take it off without Mom's permission. Mom wants to keep us from zapping ourselves to Africa, Miri, or the Caribbean, me, when she's not around to monitor our comings and goings. No broom flying or transporting for you, I say. Miri looks back at all the girls, and her shoulders tense.
I should have refused when Dad said he was sending us to camp.
Too late now, I say.
It's so unfair that Prissy gets to come for only 2 weeks and we have to stay all summer. Why can't they have a starter session for older kids, too?
My poor, socially inept sister. Unlike Prissy, you're not six. Anyway, Mom is going to be in Thailand with Lex for most of August, and it's not like she'd let us stay home alone. It's weird that my mom is suddenly so serious about Lex. I'm happy for her, of course, but what if I need to get in touch with her while she's away? Shouldn't she be at my beck and call 24/7? She'd better bring me back some exotic clothes or some hair chopsticks or something. Miri kicks the railing.
It's like I'm in prison.
Her eyes start to tear up. She has pretty much the same eyes as mine, big and brown, but her eyeballs are really white, and sometimes they glow in the dark. Not in a creepy way, more like the moon. I tickle my sister's arm. You're going to love camp, I promise. Eventually, Miri curls into a ball and falls asleep with her head on my knee. Through the window, I watch the passing of mountains and lush green trees, counting the seconds until we get to camp. I can't believe I'm going to be away from home for 7 weeks and one day. 50 days without chores. 50 days without having to watch my mom make out with Lex. 50 days without my stepmother calling me every 5 seconds to discuss her plans to get pregnant. 50 days without having to bounce back and forth between my mom and my dad. 50 days with Raph. Single, unattached Raph. Did you hear? My best friend, Tammy Wise, asked me 10 days ago when we sat down at 2 empty desks for our math exam. About what?
About Raph and Melissa.
My heart leaped straight out of my chest, hit the ceiling, then bounced back in. Okay, not really, but it felt like it. Melissa Davis, my red-headed nemesis, had started dating Raph after Raph and I broke up back in April. Not that we'd really been going out, more like quasi-going out. You know, him looking at me that way, me looking at him that way. There was a whole lot of looking going on. And one almost kiss, code for closed lips with no tongue action.
No, what? They broke up. Yes, yes, yes!
When?
Saturday night.
What happened?
He broke up with her, and she's none too pleased.
My heart was hammering, my fingers were dancing, my legs were spasming. It was like I was on an upside-down roller coaster, only I wasn't moving. I need details, Tammy, details.
Apparently, he told her that it's because he likes someone else.
Her eyebrows went into overdrive. The moderator flicked the lights off and on. Please turn over your test booklets. And that was when I felt the tingling, the raw will, the rush of cold. More specifically, the back window flew wide open.
What the?
Said the moderator as he rushed to the back of the room.
Who did that?
I did. Did I? The lights started flickering. The teacher's desk flipped smack over. The window slammed shut.
It was as if a poltergeist had taken over the classroom, and I had the twitchy yet sure feeling that I was responsible, or, more precisely, my fantabulous powers were. I did some yoga-like breathing exercises to calm myself and tried to focus on the formulas in front of me. Thank goodness this was math, a subject I knew like the back of my hand. Unfortunately, from that moment on, I noticed that whenever I got overstimulated, my magic tended to get a bit unruly. For example, while chomping Mom's cheese and tofu ravioli, I began picturing moonlit walks with Raph, canoeing with Raph, kissing Raph, and my heart started beating faster, and suddenly a ravioli square went soaring off my plate, bounced off the ceiling, and landed in my mother's carrot juice. My mom dropped her fork in mid-chew.
What was that?
If my mom knew I'd done that, I'd be eating tofu ravioli for the entire summer. Quick, I need an excuse. A scapegoat. Bad Tigger. Bad, bad Tigger. Our cat, who was curled up in his favorite corner nook of the kitchen, licking his paws, narrowed his little yellow eyes as if to say, "Are you kidding me?" My mom jumped up to clean the mess.
"Bad Tigger," she said,
and I exhaled in relief. I'm sad to admit that during the past week, I've started blaming Tigger for pretty much everything. Chair knocked over? Tigger. Lights flickering? Tigger. Toilet paper roll unraveled all over the apartment? Tigger. Okay, that last one was him, but it was because he was so pissed off at me. I must have fallen asleep, because the next thing I hear is Janice's nervous voice.
"We're here, girls. Everyone ready?"
My eyes shoot open. Our bus has pulled onto the side of a dirt road, behind a row of already parked buses. A few feet away is a wooden bridge crossing a murky pond. Beyond the bridge is a winding road that leads into thick trees. We're really here. Watch out, world! Miri, my socially inept sister, and I, a newly minted witch, both of us in swirly tie-dyed oodle-womp-ack psychedelic pajamas, have arrived. And let's not forget Glinda and Bobby. Kids are already streaming out of the buses, and I peer ahead, looking for Raph. Still no sign of him. I take a few slow breaths to calm myself. After all, I wouldn't want the buses to rise into the sky and fly off to another planet, E.T. style. That's something I couldn't possibly blame on Tigger.
"All right, girls," Janice says. "Since you all sent your duffel bags earlier in the week, they've already been brought to your cabins."
A Campwood Lake van picked up the bags at our apartment, which was a lot easier than carrying them ourselves. There must be a lot of campers from Manhattan. But I only care about one.
"In bunk 2, Janice continues, "we have Jenny Boland, Heather Jacobs, Jessica Kernan."
I zone out for a few names before I hear,
"And Miri Weinstein."
Miri squeezes my hand. "Hey, look, there's Natalie," Trishelle announces. "The Canada bus must be here already."
"Cannabus?" Miri whispers to me. "What kind of place is this?"
"Canada bus, you dork," I whisper enunciate back. Janice continues listing.
"And in bunk 14, she says 5 minutes later, "we have Morgan Sweeney, Jan Winters, Carly Engels, Rachel Weinstein, and Allison Bleichman."
"Yes! Allison is in my bunk." I turn back to her and wave. After listing the names of the girls in bunk 15, Janice says,
"If you have your sun hats or baseball caps with you, please put them on before leaving the bus."
I hate hats. I don't mind them on other people, but they always make me feel like I'm wearing a cardboard box. My baseball hats are all stiff.
I'll just pretend my mother didn't force one into my backpack. Miri pulls hers out and slaps it on.
Are you going to put your sun hat on?
She says rather loudly.
Shh! Come on, let's go.
Since we're at the front of the bus, we're the first ones off, and since we have no idea where we're going, we huddle together to wait for instructions. Janice said she would show us the way, but she is deep in conversation with some of the counselors. Great. Now what? Wander around until the summer ends and we're buried in snow?
Bunk 2 sounds awfully far away from bunk 14,
Miri says, her voice all shaky. Come on, it can't be that far.
Hi again, says a voice behind me. Hurrah, it's Allison, my new BFF.
Hi, I say with relief.
Lost?
Just a little.
Follow me.
Allison is much taller than I am, and therefore takes bigger steps.
Did you meet my sister, Miri?
I ask while practically running to keep up.
You guys look alike,
Allison says, as we follow the trail over the bridge and onto a narrow gravel road lined with tall green pine trees.
Is that a bunk?
Miri asks, pointing to a small white building peeking out on our left.
No, it's the camp office. Colton! Hey!
She squeals, waving at a guy up the road.
Howdy, Allison!
He hollers back in a thick southern drawl.
How was your year?
Not bad,
she yells, and then says to me, Colton's our age, too. He's cute. He has dimples and a buzz cut. Where's he from?
Houston, I think.
Funny. I feel like I'm in Texas.
The sky above us is still overwhelmingly bright and blue, even though by now it must be at least 4. I take a deep breath. It smells dewy and clean, kind of like the air freshener in our bathroom back home.
But, real.
As we continue along the road, the trees clear, and we pass through a shopping center-sized massive field, behind which are postcard-perfect lush green mountains. Grass, trees, hills, sky. I have never seen so much nature in one place.
There'd better not be bears here, or any wild animals for that matter. After 6 hours of online searching, fine, procrastinating studying for finals, I learned all about how bats, raccoons, and foxes carry scary diseases like rabies, Lyme disease, and plague. I didn't know plague still existed, but apparently lots of rodents up here are teeming with it. And let's not forget mosquitoes. Those little monsters are bursting with West Nile virus. But they're not getting me. No way, no how. I packed about 10 gallons of mosquito repellent.
This is Upper Field, Allison says. There are the baseball field, the kitchen staff housing, the soccer field, the Upper Field showers, and back there are bunks 16 and 17, where Colton and some of the other lion guys live.
What does lion mean exactly?
The oldest unit at camp. People finishing grades 7, 8, and 9. Koalas are the youngest, and monkeys are in the middle.
Ah. I scan Upper Field, wondering if that's where Raph sleeps. My heart makes like a deer and gallops. Deer do gallop, right? Hopefully I will never have the occasion to meet one to find out.
Here we are,
Allison announces, pointing with a flourish to a large green and white cabin on our right.
Bunks 14 and 15 are in this cabin.
Phew! At least it's a cabin. A tiny part of me was concerned that I would be spending the summer in a tent. That would be way too much nature for City Rachel. Two girls, a blonde and a redhead, are standing on the long porch, and when they spot us, they begin waving madly.
Poodles! Morgan! Allison shrieks. You're here!
She scurries up the hill on the cabin steps and throws her arms around the girls. Poodles? People bring their dogs to camp?
Check it out, Allison, the redhead squeals. Poodle's got a butterfly tattoo on her ankle, and I finally got tits.
Did she just say the T word? I hate that word. It's so vulgar.
You're blocking the way, someone says.
I turn around to see a thin, glossy girl glaring at me. She looks me up and down and flips her black hair. Then, without a word, she pushes past me, nearly knocking me over. Her hair storms behind her, and without so much as an excuse me, she heads up the hill to the cabin. How rude. I hope she's in bunk 15. But I know better than to whine about someone on my first day at camp. I wouldn't want to end up the picked-on girl. There's always one in every crowd, the girl nobody likes. It's terrible the way some kids gang up like that on one specific person. But I have to admit, I'm terrified of becoming that person myself. I find my balance and say to Miri, "Do you want me to walk with you to your cabin?" She looks nervously up the road and then back at me.
"Nah, go ahead. I'll find it."
"Rachel, come meet everyone," Allison calls from the porch. "Miri, just walk down the road to Lower Field, then take the path up the hill between bunks 1 and 3, and your bunk will be on the right."
"You sure you can make it on your own?" I ask my pale-looking sister. She gives me a brave smile.
"I'll be fine. How lost can I get?"
I decide not to remind her about the time she got lost in the basement of our apartment building. Anyway, if she gets lost, she can always zap herself back to her cabin, can't she? "Good luck," I say, and squeeze her arm. "See you at dinner." As I make my way up the hill, I feel butterflies, not tattooed ones, going haywire in my stomach. There are already towels and a few pieces of clothing hanging over the porch railing, giving the place a homey feel. A few empty duffel bags are piled in the corner. Allison has resumed her group hug with the two other girls, and I can't help feeling left out. What if I'm always the outsider? What if they think I'm just the weird new girl? I feel a tingling in my fingers, then in my elbows, then in my head, then the towels and clothing that were carefully hung over the railing all go skyrocketing into the air like kites. But unlike kites, they have nothing anchoring them to the ground and continue to soar higher and higher and higher and gone.
Ha! I totally did that. I didn't mean to, but still, I just made towels disappear. I am the queen of magic. I might have to make myself a tiara in arts and crafts.
I wonder where they went. Oh, there they are, caught in the branches. Hope someone has a ladder. Like me, the three girls are staring at the towel-covered trees. Unlike me, they have perplexed expressions on their faces. I might have to try to control my magic just a teeny bit. If towels shoot up into the sky every time I get freaked out, people are bound to notice, and then they're going to start wondering about me, and the next thing I know, they'll be tying me to a three-legged stool and dropping me into the lake like they used to do to witches in the Middle Ages. Or maybe I'll get my own talk show. One of those psychic shows where they make people talk to the dead. Wow. Can I really talk to the dead? "Hey, dead. Are you there?" No response. "Granny Esther, can you hear me?"
"Rachel, who are you talking to?" Allison asks.
I feel my face redden.
I thought I saw an old friend, Esther. We call her Granny because she's so old. At least 17. Oh, God, they think I'm a moron.
To my relief, Allison laughs.
"You are so hilarious."
She grabs my hand and leads me up the steps.
"Come meet the girls."
Hi, I say shyly. This is Morgan. She's been coming to camp as long as I have. Morgan has short, curly red hair and a spatter of freckles across her nose. If I were a director, I would so cast her as Annie. Where are you from? She asks as we check each other out. If only I weren't wearing the most ridiculous outfit in the world. The redhead is adorable. She's already changed out of the camp clothing and is now wearing a tight black t-shirt, gold-heeled flip-flops, and a short jean skirt that exposes her pale, freckled legs. I bet she has to wear a lot of sunscreen. Manhattan, I answer. Maybe she'll think my tie-dye is some sort of New Yorker fashion statement. We are normally ahead of the curve, even when we do retro. You? I live right outside Chicago. What camp did you go to before? I didn't, I reply. I mean, I went to day camp, but never sleep away. Hope you don't get homesick, she says. Please! I've been counting the days until I could venture out on my own. I'm practically ready for college. She won't, Allison says. She's going to love it. This place is the best camp. How would you know? Asks Morgan. You've never been to another camp. Neither have you. The blonde girl, the gorgeous blonde girl, I should add, pats my arm. I'm Poodles. She's our California chick, Allison says. She's been coming here forever, too. Poodles? I can't help asking. Is that some sort of California name? I knew they were New Agey, but being named after an animal? My unit head nicknamed me on the first day of camp back when I was a koala. She used to wear her hair all poofy, Morgan says, and fluffs up her friend's hair. Cool shirt, Poodle says to me. Did you get it specially made? Yes. Oh, definitely, I say and turn around. The shorts, too. Poodle smiles. Funky. So, what's your real name? I ask, turning back. Jan, but nobody here calls me that. Even my friends in Cali call me Poodles. Poodles definitely looks like she's from Cali. Can I call it Cali if I'm not from Cali? Cali sounds so cool. I wish I were from Cali. Maybe I can move to Cali. First of all, she's tall, towering over even Allison. Also, her hair is naturally blonde, I think. And she has big blue eyes and perfectly tanned arms and legs, which her short pink shorts and white tank top show off. Surely her mother is a famous movie star. We saved you a bed, she says to Allison. What if there's no bed left for me? No, that's stupid. They must have one for everybody, right? And anyway, I can just zap myself up a new one. Of course, that might cause a little confusion. There are two green wooden doors on the porch, one that says 14 and one that says 15. I follow the other girls through the one on the left, which says 14 in black paint, and immediately enter a smallish square room. Here we are, Allison says. Bunk 14, home sweet home. I look around my new, jury still out on suite, home. The walls of the bunk are paneled with beige faux wood that have names and years scribbled in black and red all over them. Michael Solinger was here, 95-06. Farah and Carrie, BFF. Linda D. loves John C. Sunlight streams through the large screened windows that overlook the porch, making the room feel super bright. The two light bulbs hanging from the white ceiling aren't even on. Directly opposite the door we just came through is an opening to what looks like a huge closet, but my feet are too glued to the dark gray floor to explore. Glued because I'm terrified. On both sides of the entranceway to the closet are metal bunk beds pressed against the back wall. No one said anything about bunk beds. Bunk beds were not in the brochure. I cannot sleep on a top bunk. It's way too far off the ground. Next to where I'm standing, sandwiched between the two windows overlooking the porch, is a lone single bed that, surprise, surprise, has already been claimed with a pink comforter and ruffled pillows. A small silver fan is attached to the metal railing on the bed, blowing air onto the marked territory, so to speak.
Carly, what are you doing?
Allison asks a dark-haired girl, who appears to be doing sit-ups on a beach towel in the middle of the room.
41? 42? Says the girl. I'm doing my stomach crunches. 44? Hold on. I'll be done when I get to 50. 47? 48? 49? 50?
She rolls back onto the towel.
Done! I have a new plan. If I do 50 sit-ups every day, my stomach will be flat by the end of the summer.
Allison squats down to hug Carly.
Still a nut job, I see. I'm not, she says, and then stands. I'm just fat.
You are not fat. Nut job, meet Rachel.
Rachel, Carly.
Hi, I say. How am I going to remember all these new names? Maybe I need tricks. For example, Carly is lying on the floor doing sit-ups on the first day of camp. Allison thinks she's nuts, so I'll call her crazy, which starts with the same letter as Carly, which is making me confused. Think I'll skip that idea.
Hey,
Carly says, shaking out her towel. She hangs it over the railing of one of the top bunks. Then she heaves herself onto the bed and pushes aside at least 10 teddy bears to find a clear spot.
Rachel, looks like you're on the top bunk above me, since it's all that's left,
Allison says, depositing her knapsack on the bottom bunk right where we're standing.
Unless you want my bottom bed.
Of course I want her bottom bed, but I probably shouldn't ask for it.
No. I'm fine on top, I lie. Hurrah to sharing with Allison. Boo to the top bunk. What are the chances I won't roll off in the middle of the night and break my head?
Maybe I can zap up an invisible net. Morgan has set up her bed under Carly's. She has a Betty Boop comforter and a matching calendar on her wall. I wish I brought something more fun than a boring old gray blanket and drab white sheets. The pink and frilly single seems to belong to Poodles. She is kneeling on her bed, taping photos of hot guys to her wall. I look around for that rude black-haired girl who nearly knocked me over, and am glad that she's not here. Are there five girls in every bunk? I ask. Five beds equals five girls, right?
No, 15 has six, Allison says. They set up the beds and the bunks based on how many people are coming to camp. Last year, all the girls in our age group were together in bunk 4 because we were 8. But this year, we're 11, so they divided us into bunks 14 and 15, which are connected back there through the cubby room.
She points to the opening between the bunk beds.
We were supposed to be 6, Poodle says. I convinced my friend Wendy to come, but she got a small role in an NBC pilot and decided to stay in Cali and take it. Lucky, Carly says.
As is Poodles, Morgan says, since she now gets a single. Allison sits down on said single and leans her back against the wall. I'm not sure exactly what to do with myself, so I pick up the communal Lysol can that's sitting on one of the empty shelves, climb up the brown, not-so-sturdy ladder, spray and spray and spray some more, and then deposit my knapsack on the saggy, stained mattress. Okay, I've claimed a bed. I will not be sleeping on the floor, unless I fall out, that is. Now what? I sit down on the edge of the bed, try to ignore the loud creak, and let my legs dangle off the edge of my dirty-looking mattress. This is terrifying. I'm going to have to zap the bunk bed into two singles. Sure, it'll be tight in here, but if I can squeeze the extra bed into the corner, I can make it all fit. Of course, I'll have to wait until no one is here before I attempt any Sabrina-style interior decoration.
Hello, Missy,
chimes a new girl from the room's back entrance. Allison jumps off the bed.
Cece!
The two girls throw their arms around each other.
You got braces,
Allison screams. Cece clamps her mouth shut and mutters,
I hate them.
They look cute.
How can braces look cute? A railroad is running across my face. I'm hideous. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not smiling all summer.
Come on.
It's true, Cece says. Anyway, I'm sad that I'm not in the same bunk as you this summer.
We're practically in the same bunk. We're connected.
Not the same, and you know it. We're not going to be at the same mess hall table or have all our activities together.
Cece!
Screams a voice from the other side of the wall.
See you later, she says,
then disappears back through the opening, bumping into an older teen along the way.
Hello, my chickadees,
sings the older teen, sauntering into the room and clapping.
Welcome back! Ready to partay?
My bunkmates hoot and holler.
Deb!
They scream.
We missed you,
says Poodles, jumping up to give the counselor a hug. After saying hi to all the girls, Deb walks over to my bed.
Hi! Welcome to camp.
Her hair is dirty blonde and tied back with a red and black checkered bandana, do-rag style. Up close, I notice that she has big eyes, big white teeth, and a big smile.
You lucked out,
she says. This side of the cabin is way better than the other. More hoots and hollers from the girls.
I bet Penelope is saying the same thing to the new girls in bunk 15,
Morgan says.
I'll have you know that Anthony let me choose which side of the cabin I wanted, and I chose you guys.
When we were all in one bunk last year, both Penelope and Deb were our counselors, Allison explains to me.
Frankly, Debs, I'm surprised you weren't sick of us. I thought you would have requested koalas after last year. I could never get sick of you girls.
Morgan snorts.
We got sick of you.
She's sitting cross-legged on her bottom bunk, her flip-flops kicked to the floor. Deb parks herself next to Morgan and starts poking her arm.
Let's see the C cups you've been emailing me about.
Morgan sticks out her chest.
Nice tits, huh?
Ew, she said it again.
Not bad.
Deb sticks out her own chest.
But not as big as mine.
Debs, you're 5 years older. I should hope yours are bigger. Mine are going to look huge, though.
Morgan continues.
You should see the bikinis I bought. They all have ridiculous padding. Will Khosravi will have no choice but to fall in lust with me.
I almost choke on my tongue. They're talking about my Will.
Keep drooling, Morgan, sweetie,
Deb says.
First of all, he's staff, and staff are not allowed to date campers. And second of all,
he told me in pre-camp that he has a serious girlfriend back home. Morgan's freckled features crumple in disappointment.
No way. Who?
Deb shrugs.
I don't remember her name.
It's Kat, I pipe up. Everyone looks at me. Morgan puts her hands on her hips.
How do you know?
I know the Khosravi boys pretty well.
Do you go to school with them? Asks Poodles, not turning around from her postering.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. I must be bright red because Morgan asks,
Did you date Will?
At the same time that Poodles asks, Did you date Raff?
Funny they should ask. Well, kind of.
Allison looks up at me.
Which one? Here comes the weird part.
Both? All four of my new bunkmates' jaws drop. So does the counselor's.
You dated Raph and Will Kusravi?
Carly squeals. Kind of. Allison whistles.
You're like a legend.
Even Poodles is now paying full attention.
Who's a better kisser?
Girls, less gossiping and more unpacking, Deb says, now fully recovered. Dinner's in 1 hour, and I expect this place to be perfectly put together by then. Got it? Off to the cubby room you go.
I step down from my bed, happy to avoid answering the question, because, unfortunately, I don't know the answer. Raph and I haven't really kissed.
Sorry, let me rephrase. Raph and I haven't really kissed yet.
When I realize that my bunkmates and my counselor are all vacating the bunk for the cubby room, I see my opportunity to fix my bunk bed situation. If I leave things the way they are, I will surely end up rolling off in the middle of the night and breaking my head. I wait a few seconds for the room to clear out, and then I hurry to the far corner of the room where no one can see me. Unfortunately, I don't have A squared. But at the prom, I made up my own spell, and that seemed to work, so I clear my throat, close my eyes, focus my raw will, and chant under my breath. Bunk bed split in two. Two single beds are what I need from you. The air gets sucked out of the room, and I jump up and down as the metal frame starts to quiver. It's working! Now the bunk bed is swaying from side to side like a rocking chair. Clank, clank, clank. Uh-oh. Suddenly, the frame cracks in two, sounding like a firework, and causing the top bunk to crash into Allison's bed below it. See, the thing is, I was kind of imagining two perfectly formed single beds, not one bunk bed sawed in half. I was planning on telling the other girls that the bunk bed had been desperately needed in one of the other bunks, and that I had reluctantly agreed to let them have it in return for two singles. Yeah, my plan was obviously not very well thought out.
What was that?
Poodles asks, rushing back into the room with Deb and Carly.
Oh, my God! My bed!
Shrieks Allison from behind them.
Rachel, are you okay? You could have been killed.
If this had happened when you were asleep, you both could have been killed, Deb says, eyes wide.
I'm fine. I'm fine,
I tell them sheepishly. I'll call the office and tell them to get a new bunk bed pronto, Deb says. Plus, I'm making them check over every bed here to make sure they're secure. In all my years here, I have never seen that happen. What can I say? She's never had a witch for a camper. Just one more thing I can't blame on Tigger.